Hey, everybody. My name is John Paler. Welcome to the Bipolar Podcast. I'm here with Oliver. My name is John. And Oliver, I'd love to hear if you could explain to everybody your background and how you've dealt with bipolar disorder, your kind of story.
Yeah, well, my background is, I was very lucky. I got great parents. I was brought up in Scotland, in the countryside, very sort of beautiful places. Got very, very manic when I was 17, just before my final year exams. Ended up in a mental hospital in Edinburgh, having become completely sort of delusional and psychotic and manic. And then was kind of, the doctors tried to sort of stabilize me, but the drugs I was given took me very far down. I then spent the next probably 2.5 years just trying to kind of get stable, trying to discover whether I needed medication or not and what medication, whatever, which was not a lot of fun. But long story short, I got stable on lithium. And although I had my disadvantages with it, it allowed me to live a really good life for about 10-15 years. And I worked as a trader in London, which was probably a completely inappropriate job for someone with bipolar. It's very stressful. But it was interesting in many ways. Yeah. It didn't suit me. I quit. I then learned to meditate. And that's been a big part of my journey with bipolar, has been the Ishaya's Ascension meditation that I practice. Gosh, it's such a long story. I'm just going to say it short. Basically, I've been well for the last 7 years, which is fantastic. And I think we're going to talk about the things that have helped me and John in this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome, Oliver. Because we're at a similar point in our lives, because I'm the same way. I've gotten to a point of stability the past like 6-7 years. Where I feel like I can manage better. So I won't go into my story as much, because if you want to know more about my history, you can listen to some of the past episodes. But like Oliver, it's been a journey for me. I was diagnosed back in 1999 after a huge, just an intense manic episode with psychosis and delusions and the whole gamut. And I spent so many years trying to fine tune my medications. It took like 10 years for me to figure out finally, this is the set of meds, because like we're going to start talking about here, the medication for me at least too, has been very, very helpful. But just to give you just a little background about me, I'm the president of the Bipolar Battle Incorporated, which is a nonprofit now. We just turned it into a nonprofit last fall because I founded the Bipolar Battle blog in 2017 and published my book, This War Within My Mind, back in 2020. And I just started my own publishing company called JP Publisher. But Oliver, I'd love for you to tell the audience about your book.
My book is called Befriending Bipolar, A Patient's Perspective. And it's my story, my journey with bipolar and what I've discovered, what works for me, what doesn't work for me, the way bipolar has affected my relationships, my career possibilities, my health. It's really a way of just educating people more about bipolar, but through my experiences. I like to, when I write and when I talk, I like to keep things to what I've experienced rather than sort of generalize about bipolar or people in general, because one thing I've seen is that bipolar and mental issues, they affect everyone individually. And although there are commonalities in the way we experience these challenges, everyone seems to have to find their own way. And whilst we can get inspiration from others and we can get ideas from others, we have to do our own journey.
Yes, I totally agree with you. That's the way I am with all of my advocating online and so forth, is that we're all so individuals. I mean, even down to the medications, you can take a medication and I can take the same one and we can have completely different results and different side effects and how it impacts us. And then different cocktails of meds together will be completely different. And like you said, it's our own journey. And like you, I talk from my own journey as well and make sure everyone knows, like, this is my experience. This is my, I'm talking from my own journey. And I think that's really important for like you and for me and anybody else out there is to share our stories, what works for us and what doesn't, because we do have the same illness, but our symptomology can be completely different. Not everybody that has bipolar, they don't all experience delusions, psychosis, and so forth. And I think together today, we want to talk about ways to live your best life, your most fulfilling life. And I'd love for you to start out, Oliver.
Cool. Well, I think the one thing that has had a massive effect on my stability, well, there's two things. There's lithium that I take and there's meditation. So there's medication and meditation. That's going to be really difficult. Long story short, with lithium, I get a lot of side effects. It's not like this amazing sort of wonder drug that just, you know, does everything, stabilizes me, and I can do whatever I want. I do have a lot of side effects. I get headaches. I get very tired. I have a lot of problems using my brain and doing some simple mathematics and organizing things and stuff like that. But it has stopped me being really sick. And that is kind of not to be discounted. So the severe depressions and the severe manias that I had, I haven't ever had them when I've been on lithium. And so that's obviously important to remember. But so that's kind of me putting the medication in there. People have different relationships with medication. You know, it's a very emotive subject. Some people are extremely anti, some people are extremely pro. I think both views are potentially irresponsible. I think in general, one has to just try and find one's way and be open to medication. And if you have support from doctors, whatever, trying no medication too, if that's what people want to try. But I feel this kind of this very, very dogmatic approach that quite a few people have to medication. It's almost like the approach people have to vaccines. It's like they sort of feel they have to go one way or the other in a really strong way. And I don't think, I think the middle way really is what it's about, because if we're more relaxed in our approach, if we're more open in our approach, then it's kind of easier to find solutions than if we just dig ourselves in a corner. And so that's the medication bit. Talking about the meditation, I can only really talk about the meditation I practice because it's very unique. It's a form of meditation that takes people to this sort of stillness that they can experience within, this kind of aliveness or presence or awareness. And after a period of time, we start to see the habits in our mind that causes a lot of pain and a lot of emotional suffering. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't necessarily think that meditation would do anything for me in an episode, really, quite honestly, because by then my mind's just gone and I'm not really aware enough to meditate. But in the long periods when I'm well, it's allowed me to become a really very peaceful, generally happy person. And that's something that I don't see a lot of in the world, let alone in the bipolar world. So really, I'm a big advocate for it. But I also think that an individual has to be drawn to it if you want to do it. Like, I'm not one of these people who would want to pressure people into meditating. It's much more that this has really worked for me. I'm suited to it. It's suited to me. And thank God, because I feel that I'm a very happy, peaceful person because of it.
Yeah, I see. I'm totally on board with you with the medication and meditation. I think, like you were saying about medication, there is such a black and white look of a perspective on. You have the anti-psychiatry movement, which is, you know, no meds, no any sort of psychiatric intervention. And then there's the other, like you said, you have to. And what I found, I don't know if you found this too, but at actually living with bipolar disorder, it's so interesting because you and I have this illness where it is severe mania, severe depression. You know, we have these extremes, but I feel like after going through and experiencing these extremes, it's opened my mind up more to finding the gray area. So like with medication, I've tried medication just that and without, and I found like with my own journey is the medication helps me get into a spot where I can function and I can manage. And then like you using tools like meditation, when we're stable, I think finding that what those tools, those strategies that work for you when you're stable is what's most important. Because when, like you said, when you're going through mania or severe depression, that's not the time to deal with these tools that, okay, I'm going to, you know, you're not able to really, you can't think in a way that is that you're able to comprehend anything. I mean, like you said, and I've said, delusions and hallucinations, psychosis. I mean, the last thing on your mind is, okay, I need to be meditating or whatnot. And for me, finding, like with my medication regimen, I'm at the point where, yes, I know I'm going to have to stay on meds my whole life, but that's my journey. And what I used to be on like 15 different medications, and that was just way, way overboard. And throughout the years, I've dwindled them, you know, they've kind of titrated down. So now I'm on the least amount of meds that I've ever been on now. But now that I'm stable, I do everything in my power each day using tools and strategies that will keep me there. And I think that's the biggest thing in terms of trying to find a way to function and to live our most fulfilling life. Because for me, like every day I work out, I lift weights, I love running now, I'm getting back into that. And that's like a non-negotiable for me, because it gets my head into a good space, it gets my mind or my body into a good space. And I think that's a big thing we should bring up too, is that the whole mind-body connection, if one isn't working right, the other isn't going to be working right either. And since we only have one body, this is the life that we're living it in. This is our shell that, I mean, I have the perspective that I want to treat it in the most respect that I can. So I try to eat healthy, make the good choices or decisions on what I choose to eat and drink. And like I said, exercise. And for me, meditation, it's like you said, I've known it to work for tons of people. Like for me personally, I've tried meditation, different types of the different modalities of, meditation practices. And a lot of them I'm not able to utilize in the way that helps me, calms me down. But what I try to do is practice more mindfulness, where throughout the day, I'll stop and take a deep breath. And in the practice where you want to look at all five senses, like what do you see? What do you hear right at this exact moment? So you're trying to bring yourself into the moment. And that's been helpful for me, because I've tried other meditations too. And for me, it's hard for me to calm my mind, because I don't know about you, but my mind is always going. And so the only time that it actually kind of slows down is when I take medication in the morning and night, and then at nighttime, the medication kind of slows my thoughts and gets me to where I'm like calming down and so forth. So that's just kind of for me though. But like you said, we're also individual. We're all different. And so like for you, meditation works really well, and mindfulness for me works more so in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, we have to find our own way. It's so important. And, yeah. You know, I think particularly often people with bipolar, they don't like being told what to do. We tend to be fairly imaginative, sort of interesting, often sometimes resistant types, sometimes authority issues there. I certainly had quite a lot of that in my life.
Me too.
Yeah, but I think you're absolutely right. You've got to find your own way. It's interesting though with me, with the meditation that I do, because I had a super fast mind, as you know, probably most people listening to this can relate to. And it was very negative, and all the time was just like go, 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 like almost like living in a hypermanic state. That was my normal. And I guess for the last 6 or 7 years, my mind's been pretty much quiet. I hardly ever have thoughts. I have sort of moments of inspiration. But I don't have this, dialogue just chewing away at me like I used to. And that's obviously leads to me being, when I'm well, it means that I'm very peaceful and happy. But it also means, you know, I've tried without lithium. I tried coming off lithium and trying other medication, no medication. It was a complete disaster. I ended up in psychiatric hospitals and really having a hell of a time. And my family had a hell of a time. And I guess that's probably my next point would be that with bipolar, we have to try to be a bit mature about the choices we make. It's very easy, particularly if we're coming from a manic episode, to just be fast and just do whatever we want to do and have this kind of attitude of, well, I'll do what I want to do. But I don't think that works. It's almost like people with bipolar are being given this amazing opportunity to mature very quickly as people. You know, you sometimes see people who haven't really been challenged and they're, you know, 55, 65 years old, and they're not very grown up. They don't really know how to deal with other people. They're not necessarily very kind. They're just not very mature human beings. But when you get hit with a mental illness like bipolar, it certainly gives us the opportunity to step back and say, well, what kind of people do we want to be? Do we want to be good? Do we want to be as happy as we can be? Do we want to contribute to society? Or do we just want to be angry about everything and think that this is totally unfair? You know, ultimately it's kind of up to us to decide.
Yeah, I totally agree, Oliver. I think you make so many good points there, because with dealing with any sort of illness, whether it's bipolar disorder or another chronic illness, it's such a big thing, like an adversity, that you're forced to deal with it. And if you can either, like you said, you can be angry and people can deny it and they can just be like, I don't have this, I'm not going to treat it. And you kind of see the path that that leads. But for like you and I think we both have kind of taken it like a responsible, okay, I'm going to take responsibility for what I can control and try to, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is like with the controlling part, I control what I can, because when I do go through a manic episode, I know how that's going to impact my loved ones and a major depressive episode. And so for me, it's very important. I have two kids and I'm married. And for me, I have to really take personal responsibility for what I do each day. So I make sure that, okay, John, today I'm going to make sure I get enough sleep, I drink enough water, I get my exercise in, because I know if I just let that go to the wayside, there's going to be consequences and I'm going to decompensate. And so it forces us to, you know, having an illness like this, to kind of look at ourselves and be like you said, how do I want to be? Do I want to be kind? How do I want to interact with people? Because so many people, I think, go through life, like you said, without dealing with any sort of adversity. They don't know what it's like to feel this extreme this way or extreme this way. And because of that, like an illness like bipolar disorder, it puts it right in your face. Like, you have to deal with this. And how are you going to? And I think for you and I we've done a great job of, okay, we're going to take steps. We're going to take action. And we're not just going to take action, but healthy action. The things that we do are going to have a positive impact on ourselves, so we can, how we're going to interact with those around us. Because like you said too, about, do I want to be a contributing member to society? Like for me, my bipolar is so severe that I could easily just say, okay, I want everybody else to kind of take care of me. I want, you know, society, whatever, but that's not what I want to do. I want to help others. I want to use what I've learned to help others so they can live the life that they want to, because I know it can, you can do it. So I hope that all makes sense. Sometimes I feel like I'm just like rambling around and stuff, but.
No, that made perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Okay.
It was great.
Cool. Right on. Cause what are some other strategies that you have found that have been helpful for you? Cause what on a daily basis, kind of, why don't you tell us about your routine and what you found helpful and how you came to that point of the routine that you're in now that's been so healthy for you?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm still working on my routine. And I think I only really started taking a sensible approach to bipolar about 7 years ago, actually. I think before then I was in denial mainly denial, bit of resentment, bit of anger. But so for me, it took me a while to get to space where I could do all the things that I'm suggesting, you know. Mm-hmm. But I guess for me, my daily routine is, I mean, I try and sleep as well as I can. I sometimes use melatonin, you know, just the little, they're really nice little drops, actually. They work well.
Yeah.
Little tablets,
yeah.
They work well for me. No real side effects there. If it's like 2 a.m. and I'm not asleep or I've woken up, then I usually take like a heavier sleeping pill, like a pharmacy, you know, sleeping pill that I need a prescription for.
Oh yeah.
Again, okay. I don't mind doing that because you get this morning, I sometimes feel a bit grumpy or get a little bit of a headache, but I figured out the kind of the least amount I can take that still works. So that minimizes the side effects. So that's kind of useful.
Right.
And also it's nice to have kind of like a rule in my head for this so that I don't just lie in bed wondering whether I should take a pill or not, you know, for hours and hours. So my basically rule is that if I can't get to sleep within, say, an hour or so of head on the pillow, then I would take one of those strong ones. Right. And if I can't get to sleep within like, you know, even 20 minutes of, then I just take a melatonin. So I take them most nights. So that's cool because if I have like 2 really bad nights sleep, then I can start hallucinating and getting a bit weird. So I want to avoid that. Exercise. I couldn't do exercise for years and years and years because the side effects of lithium just got much worse. Now, whether that was because of dehydration or I had too much lithium in my blood, or I don't know. And the doctors don't know, but the long story short, I started a keto diet about 3 months ago, and that's been really helpful.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And as someone who loves exercise, and you know what it's like if you couldn't go to the gym and you couldn't run, it's like, oh shit, you know?
Yes,
it's not good.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm working with it very gently. So I'm just doing like 12 minute jogs most days now, and that seems to be going all right. So I'm just going to see where it goes. I try to just live in the moment and just do one thing at a time, which I don't always manage, but I try. I guess one of the things that's very important to me that will be interesting to see what your listeners think of this, because the whole sort of bipolar world can be all very serious. I think humor is massively important. So I watch a lot of comedy. I'm very good at laughing at myself and laughing at the fact that I'm mentally ill. I wouldn't expect anyone to laugh at being mentally ill when they were mentally ill. But I think that when we're stable, it's very good to have a bit of humor around the whole thing. And that just kind of takes the edge off it. I think there are too many people who take bipolar too personally, and they build up this identity of this broken person who's really unfortunate and in this terrible situation, this terrible illness. And it makes them far more serious and limited than they need to be. Whereas if we can laugh about it and have a joke about with our family about how weird we are, or I'm the nutcase in the family, whatever, all these rather unpolitically correct things. I think it's extremely healthy, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting you say that, because I'm the same way. I always am joking around with my wife, and we're always trying to make each other laugh, because like you said, it's bipolar disorder, any mental illness in life in general is so serious. There's so much going on. And if you can laugh about it, I mean, it's, if you look at, I had a gentleman on my show, Tristan Miller, and he is a comedian. And I love the fact using comedy to, I mean, it breaks the ice of all the craziness that we have to deal with. So I think that's awesome. I'm on the same page with you with humor. Because, you know, something I was just thinking about too, just talking about our routines and, you know, what's helpful. One of the things I've found, not just with myself, but with all the people I've spoken with through the years, is that it seems like with a mental illness, the basic, Milo's hierarchy, I think it is.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, Maslow. Yeah, yeah. And so like at the basic level, it seems like things go to the wayside for us, because the last thing you're going to be thinking about when you're going through an episode is, oh, what food should I eat? Should I take a shower? Should I brush my teeth? I mean, when you're depressed, the last thing you really want to do is even get out of bed. And so once we're stable, focusing on those basic things will help us, I believe, or it's been helpful for me at least, is to get back to a better stable, a better level of stability. So, I mean, do you find that too?
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring it up a very good point, because whenever we talk about bipolar, it's almost like we should almost have sort of two different sort of conversations, you know, one talking about when we're ill, maybe we're in hospital, or maybe we're very depressed or very manic or hypomanic, whatever. And there are certain rules that apply to most people then. And most of those rules would be, you know, get help, you know, get professional help, try and get your support from your loved ones, family, whatever it is. And it's almost like it's an emergency situation. You know, it's not a situation where people can sort of try to be positive or anything like that. It's more like just get help. And then you've got the other side of bipolar, which is when the person with bipolar is balanced and okay. And that's really where I think there's a lot of room for experimentation and trying to find the things that really light us up. Because there's no reason why someone with bipolar can't live a very happy, fulfilling life. But in order to do that, it's probably going to be tougher for them than someone who hasn't got bipolar. And that's something we just kind of have to accept. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. And I think looking at our attitude is perhaps one of the most important things. And again, you don't look at your attitude when you're really depressed or ill. That's just, you're just trying to survive. You're going to have to get through it. But when you're here, we can look at our attitude. And, and you know, things like, for me, I mean, in my book, I talk about a lot of ways to sort of, I support myself, and you do the same in your book. And one of the sort of, I guess, I think it's one of the best ways is to give to other people, and also to practice being kind, and also to try and find some kind of purpose in life. It doesn't need to be a massive purpose. You don't need to come here to save the world or whatever. That's particularly dodgy if we're from bipolar. But just to having the purpose, like, I want to be a good person. I want to be a kind person. I want to make a difference to someone every week, whatever it is. Right. And to start playing with sort of these sort of attitude things, because I think that once we start to shift our attitude, it's easier then to kind of implement or solidify the other things. You know, I'll give you an example. If someone is quite naturally sedate or lazy, and they don't like exercise, but they kind of know that, you know, going to the gym is good for them, or walking in the woods is good for them. If they just try to force themselves to walk to the woods and go to the gym, they'll probably keep failing and just give up. Why bother? Right. But if they look at their attitude and what's behind it, and why am I not doing this? And why am I being self-destructive? Is there something else I'd rather do, you know, that can help me? Then they can find a solution that then enables the action to be so much easier. So looking at the way we view life can be very helpful, I think.
I totally agree with you, Oliver. I think that's one of the things too, like I preach a lot, is that taking action in, like I've already mentioned, taking personal responsibility, what we can do, what we can control. Because like you said, when we're going through a mood episode, that's when we're in crisis. That's when we're just trying to survive. And that's not a good time to sit and try to reflect on, oh, who am I? Or, you know, what, how do I want to be? It's that the time that when you're stable, if you can get to the, if you can find those strategies, those tools, I found for me, those episodes have been less and less in terms of their frequency and their intensity. Cause I'm at the point now where I just experience the kind of, so, you know, the normal, the general ups and downs that everybody experiences. I'm not always feeling the extreme high, the extreme dip. And so during this time that I'm stable, I do all these things. And I found that being healthy, doing, you know, like you said, with your attitude at that time, it has such a huge impact on just not yourself, but those around you. Because you know how it is when you're around somebody who's always pessimistic and like, oh, woe is me. I'm the victim. Life always throws these horrible things at me. And if you actually, one of the things I like to do is just take a second when you wake up in the morning and right before you go to bed and think in your mind, what are five things you're grateful for? Instead of saying, oh man, I wish I had this. This stinks. It sucks, the situation I'm in. Hey, I'm grateful I have a roof over my head right now. I've been in a spot where I haven't had a place to live yet. You had to crash on somebody's couch. I'm grateful for my kids, my wife, my pets, that I'm able to get up and take care of them and walk them. And I have the energy to do that. And I'm keeping things under control. It's just a matter of, if you start practicing those daily, just finding those things each day that you're grateful for and putting it in the just practice of, okay, I'm grateful for X, Y, and Z. And you do that each day, over time, you just automatically start thinking that way. And it's going to have a positive impact on your mood, your mind, and your body. Because you know how it is when you're around somebody who's negative, it just feels like you get the energy sucked out of you, you know, that just, they take it. And so, I'm totally on the same page as you. So, yeah. But I'm trying to think, I think one of the things that, I mean, trying to find our most fulfilled, like living our most fulfilling life when you have a mental illness, like you said, it is attitude. And using comedy to help the humor in our daily lives, I think that's huge. And I think finding a way though that we can get stable it has to be number one after just accepting that we even have this. Because if you don't accept that you have an illness, you're not going to do anything special to treat it. But if you know, okay, I do have bipolar disorder, I need to take steps to make myself healthy to treat it, you can totally do that. Because I'm such a huge believer that everybody can manage it. If you can find the right treatment, you can successfully manage it. And like you said, when we spoke about at the beginning, it's not the same for everybody. So finding what works for you, your truth, is what's going to help you get to that point where you can live the life that you want to. It's just a matter of finding those tools, those strategies to get to the point where you are stable. You know, I mean, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. I find a lot of comfort in the way I sort of view life on the kind of the biggest step scale. And what I'm about to say, you might relate to it, listeners, and you might not, but it's just how I see the world. But I don't believe that we are born to be a successful doctor or an amazing businessman or woman, or to be like a great athlete, or even to be like a good parent. I believe that the primary reason we're born is to grow. And when I say growing, I mean to become more loving, more kind, more wise, more accepting of life. And this kind of primary reason, it doesn't exclude the other reasons. So everything else I said about the doctor and family and whatever, those can be very much valid parts of life. But I think the primary reason is for us to grow as individuals. And when you look at something like bipolar and you're not in an episode, it's an amazing opportunity to grow. It's an incredible opportunity to force us to find peace and to find some kind of balance in a world that is pretty far from balanced at the moment. And, you know, there are a lot of people in the world who live at 100 miles an hour, almost hypomanic. Maybe they are hypomanic, you know, but they don't necessarily ever have to address it. Whereas people with bipolar, we're given this incredible wake up call where it's like, oh, I have to deal with this. You know, at some point, we might not do that at the start. It took me about 15 years, but it kind of lands on us. It's like, we have to deal with this. And that's when we can really work on finding peace or being a better person or being kinder or studying something that we're interested in. But, and we have the opportunity to see that happiness isn't found in success. It's not. You find anyone who's fulfilled the highest success, whether it's a doctor or an athlete or whatever, or a parent. And there will be moments or maybe a couple of weeks where they feel really happy about it. You know, I've just won the medal. This is great. And then they go back to exactly what they were before. Right. And that doesn't mean that people shouldn't move towards a success. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But what it means is that it's really helpful to realize that success won't make us happy. Right. And I say that because for a lot of people with bipolar, they believe that they can't have traditional success. And actually, many of us can't. That is true. Many of us can't. We can't do whatever we want to do. Funnily enough, actually, very few people can do whatever they want to do, but we're kind of a bit more limited like that. But what we can do is we can grow and we can love and we can be kind and we can develop as individuals. And then when we die, it's like the trip to Earth may have had a lot of suffering in it, but it was worth it because we left a wiser person than we came in. And I think that's, I think that makes, to me, it means life makes sense. When you look at life, it's just like, we're here, we work, we die. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's huge, Oliver. I think that's such a big, especially your ideas about success, because I've written articles about this because I've had to redefine success for myself. And so what I do, to me, it's like you said, excuse me, people think, okay, to get success, you know, making all this money, getting all these things. And if you notice, the majority of those people that have all the material things in the world, it's like, you know, I'll get this one thing. Oh, I'm so excited about it. This is great. And then you see that with kids. They'll say, oh, I want this. You give them this toy. And then a day or two later, they're on to the next thing. Oh, I want this now. The material things aren't what's going to make us happy. And I think, like you said, focusing on yourself and being the best version of yourself that you can, because the whole culture that we're in, again, I love all your points. Everything that you've said, totally resonates with me, is that we, you know, like with doctors or whatever career it is, it just seems like there's a lot of burnout culture, sort of the only way that you can be successful is to work as much as you can and to make as much money as you can. And for me, I found is that it's not just a matter of working as hard as you can, but as smart as you can too. Like, what are some smart ways to do things? You don't have it. I like to keep things as simple as possible in my world because it is so complicated. All the issues, the struggles, the things going on, it's overwhelming. I actually, one of the things I can't watch the news regularly anymore. I used to watch it and keep up to date with everything that's going on. And I know some people might say, well, gosh, then you're not knowledgeable about current events and what's going on. But for me, I'm extremely empathetic. And so I take on all that energy, and it can bring me down to the point where physically I'm getting sick. So that's just something that I found helpful is, okay, I'm not gonna watch the news, but I am gonna focus on the good things. Because if we can focus on, like you said, I love just kind of challenging myself, like, okay, throughout the day, I want everybody that I walk by, I wanna smile and say, hi, have a great day too. And if you notice, the majority of people, well, for me, from where I'm at, I don't know how it is anywhere else, but they always react in a positive way. They're like, oh, hey, have a great day. Oh, hey. And it's just like yesterday, I was just telling my wife, these glasses that I have, I brought them into the store because I needed to get, this is just kind of a random example, but the pads on my glasses, I took them in and I just said, hey, I need to replace. And so when she brought it out, I said, oh, thank you so much. That's awesome. This is so great. And then she said, and I cleaned them in a special way. And I said, that is so odd. I was very grateful. And she told me, she said, I love it when you come in here because you're always so grateful and gracious with just doing these simple things for you. And that's the sort of attitude, like you said, trying to embrace that and find that it's huge. It's not just for yourself, but everybody around you. It permeates into everybody else's lives and how it affects them too. So I really, you know, I'm totally agree with all your points and totally on the same page. So yeah, I love it, Oliver. So
it's great that you're spreading the joy.
Oh yeah, thanks. You too, man. I love hearing just all the good things, like, because all these examples and these things that you're saying will help us lead a better life and make us a better human being overall.
Yeah. So. It's very interesting what you say about the news, because I've actually just made a video about it. I haven't put it out yet, but I decided not to watch the news for 2 weeks. And I noticed a few things. The first was that I was a bit addicted to the news. You know, it was such an easy thing to go to. The second thing was that I've asked a few people why they watch the news, and I've been asked, and we all had the same reply, which you had too, which was, oh, I need to know what's going on in the world. I need to, stay, you know, this kind of like responsible answer, you know. And I kind of sat with that and I thought, well, I don't ever do anything. You know, I might see there's a war in Afghanistan. I didn't go and help. I don't send them any money. I wouldn't even know who to send money to. You know, I don't do anything. So that's a bit strange. And then I kept kind of experimenting with it. And I realized that the reason why I watch the news, and I would guess this is the reason why most people watch it, is that it was like watching a real life version of a soap opera. And the way it's presented and the way that these things, these dramas happen, and they're usually fairly similar. If you watch the news from 15 years ago, it's pretty similar. It's about a war, it's about a disease, it's about the government doing something wrong, whatever, you know, it's the same stuff. And I realized that I got this like negative emotional payoff, but it felt quite good. And like you said, I would also sometimes get a bit down if it was too heavy or whatever. And I thought, this isn't good. But the reason I'm saying this is not to antagonize everyone who watches the news, because that's an awful lot of people.
I'm not saying that either. That's why I said, for me, it's my personal. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah.
But the reason I'm saying it is because, just to get people to think a little bit about it, because I found that when I didn't watch the news for 2 weeks, my mood was better. And I wasn't carrying around this kind of almost invisible worry about the world or something. And also the things I talked about were different, because rather than bringing up news stories to talk to with people, I would have to find something else. And it was inevitably more positive and more personal. I would challenge anyone to really have a look at why you watch the news. And if you do have to watch it, do you have to watch as much? That would be my question.
No. And I really want to say again, I'm not trying to say, like, if you watch the news, you're a bad person at all. I'm not, or anything like that. I'm not saying that at all. I want people to know, like, for me, that's been my experience. It's been very helpful for me to not watch it. So Yeah, no.
You're a lot nicer than I am.
No, you're just as nice, Oliver. I'm trying to think. Are there any other points that we could touch on about living a fulfilling life? I think we've hit some of the major points. So I don't know if there's, we could talk about it all day, of course, but.
I think probably the most important thing is that for listeners, like when you know, if you do decide to make a big change or try something new or ever, it's hopefully you've got a doctor who you can just have a quick chat to and who's kind of on board and is willing to reflect to you if they think it's a bad idea, basically. The reason I say that is it's not so that, you know, everyone sort of feels like, oh God, why do I have to check my doctor all the time? It's more that to have a healthy working relationship with another human being who's a professional just can be really helpful because then we don't have to take a lot of the burden on ourselves. So if I, for example, I've done this ketogenic diet for 3 months and I was doing it with a psychiatrist and a dietitian, and it felt incredibly good to have professionals with me rather than just try to figure out through a book. I don't even know if the person who wrote a book about it even knows what they're talking about. So I guess it's more from a perspective rather than, you know, me being very sort of weak and pathetic and I always need to check with my doctor. It's more like it's great to try and build up some kind of working relationship where they can help us to be weller.
I think that's another great point too. Like for me, the whole medical model of treatment is medication and therapy, and so for me that's been very helpful. And having a doctor, a medical professional who monitors my meds, and then I have a therapist who helps me with the day-to-day things, and I'll see my therapist every other week. And having, like you said, a working relationship, a relationship with somebody else that you can bounce these ideas off of, and especially medication. I want to say too, if you're listening to this, never make a change with your medication unless you talk to your doctor or other medical professional who's monitoring your situation. You never want to do changes by yourself without them knowing. So I just want to make that disclaimer. So, but I totally lost my train of thought, but
I think we've covered it pretty well.
I think we have. Cool. Awesome, Oliver. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You're a star. Thank you.
Yeah, so are you. I love chatting with you. You're the best, man. Okay.
If you found this podcast episode helpful in any way, please consider pledging financial support to me and my mission of empowering those of us living with bipolar disorder. Your pledge allows me the ability to record these episodes and provide them to you. Thank you for your consideration.